Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. Got in touch with this next guest, Rick Jetter, in January of 2020 after having been tipped to read the School Leader Dunk Tank book because of going through my own adversity story in the year prior. And if you haven't already read his book, it really rips the bandage off of situations that can occur in any industry and sometimes surprisingly also occur in schools. So if you've gone through any type of adversity or feel like you've been in the dunk tank, this book is a book for you. In this episode, we talk a lot about his own experience with alcoholism, as well as his recovery and his current work. I'm also collaborating with Rick on a book about what educators should stop doing that is coming out in 2021. So enjoy this episode. This is a different type of episode, a different type of coming out of the trenches story, and I hope you like it. My next guest is Dr. Rick Jetter, PhD, aka Dr. J. He is the assistant head of schools at the Western New York Maritime Charter School. He is also co-founder of Pushing Boundaries Consulting and is an educator, author, speaker, and national education consultant. He has worked in the field of education for over 20 years and has held the positions of alternative education teacher, English teacher, assistant principal, principal, assistant superintendent, and superintendent of schools before pursuing a career in consulting, speaking, writing, consulting with his co-author of various books, business partner and friend, Rebecca Cota. Rick has written 7 books for the educational community, numerous articles, and has also contributed to various chapters for other authors' edited works. You can learn more about Rick and his work by visiting rickjetter.com. And besides several educational books, he has also written Escaping the School Leader's Dunk Tank, How to Prevail When Others Want to See You Drown. Welcome to the podcast, Rick.
Hey, Dana. Thanks so much. I feel like I've known you forever.
Yeah, we first got in touch earlier this year, and I'm so glad that you wanted to be on the podcast. So, you know, a lot of people have read your School Leader Dunk Tank book and some of your other books, and you know, I thought you'd be the perfect candidate to talk about maybe a story of when you were in the trenches and how you managed to crawl out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, does trenches include hell? I mean, is it like out of hell?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. However you want to define it.
I don't intend on going back to hell, but I think I came out of it, maybe.
Yes.
I've got a couple burn wounds, but I really appreciate you wanting to talk about this story. And Rebecca Cota and I have talked about the dunk tank for, well, since 2016 when the book came out, and we were really fortunate to speak to school leaders and educators across the nation. I've seen some really cool places, and I can't believe it, right? Because that happened after the trenches from hell. So mm-hmm. I guess I'll try to generalize really what I went through. So I don't bore your listeners, but picture this, right? Picture a very high functioning school district with loads of terrific people, right? Mm-hmm. But then picture some Board of Education revenge initiatives, right, that start to trickle in to the environment. Mm-hmm. And it really starts to create a hangman, right? And at one point, as the superintendent of a school district, I felt that the only work that I was doing was protecting the district from legal issues that involved some of this animosity and adversity that came from some staff and board members. Mm-hmm. And I felt like all I was doing, and I don't have a law degree, right? But I felt like all I was working on were legal issues, mm-hmm. and issues of absolute chaos. And I started to drink heavily. And when I say drink heavily, Dana, I mean, there's the 750 milliliter bottle, and then there's the 1.5 milliliter bottle. I mean, I was like bathing my cereal, my breakfast cereal, in vodka, and it really, the amount that I consumed was, I can't believe I still have my liver. You know, I really can't believe it. But it got to the point where that was my coping mechanism for this absolute chaos. And the pressures of leading a community out of this chaos, mm-hmm. I felt it was pretty heavy on my shoulders. And it got to the point where I made some very bad decisions because of my alcoholism. And I was able to seek refuge and rehab. And I had probably some of the best doctors I've ever met in my life. I actually still keep in touch with them today. And they helped to train my mind that alcohol was like turpentine, mm-hmm. right? And it got to the point where I was able to recover and come out of the nightmare, and self-inflicted nightmare, right? I mean, I'm going to take full ownership for my alcoholism. But to come out of that and be healthy, like, I look different right now.
Yeah.
If people actually saw our Zoom chat right now, my face looks normal, where I used to have a balloon face because it was just filled with vodka. Mm-hmm. I looked different, you know, I felt different. Merging that with prescription meds and Xanax and using it like a Pez dispenser, you know, I was basically just trying to make the daily pain go away and self-medicating. So I did come out of that. It was tough though. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on the news, I was everywhere. People, friends that you thought were your friends turned their back on you, friends that you never think would step up and support me because they knew the chaos. My wife, just God bless her, you know, went through it with me, you know, and I came out of hell. You know, I wrote my own ticket in hell while I was in hell, and then got out. I think God helped me through it. Mm-hmm. And from there, I started to get, I was actually hired by an educational resource company right away, mm-hmm. After I left the superintendency. And I started to use my skills in a different way. And then I started to get into consulting and publishing and writing The Dunk Tank, which talks about this crazy nonsense that goes on in really schools everywhere. Mm-hmm. This type of adversity, and it ranges on a continuum, right? It's not always this hell type of existence, but it ranges, and it starts with even the lightest adversity or backstabbing that can then snowball and lead to really dunking a lot of great people out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel terrific. I'm actually back in education on top of the consulting work and author work that I do. I'm an assistant head of schools at a beautiful, beautiful charter school that helps students in the inner city of Buffalo. And I love these kids. You know, I tell my superintendent all the time that I need them just as much as they need me. Mm-hmm. So that to me is out of the trenches, and being sober and being happy and looking back on it, and I actually don't have a bitter taste in my mouth from it. Mm-hmm. I feel good. And I think it brought me a ton of wisdom. Mm-hmm. That was a long story, but.
Well, I think your story really helps for those educators, because, I mean, you were not only in the trenches, but you were in hell, as you said, and it was a self-inflicted hell. And it got really, you know, you're really deep down in there, right? Not everybody maybe is going through alcoholism, but there are some, you know, stories in your book, and, you know, we hear sometimes about educators, you know, who just, you know, abuse prescription drugs and abuse alcohol, and
neglect, you know, self-care, and it just, it damages them. It damages their family. Some of my previous guests on the podcast have talked about, you know, they managed to kind of take that wake up call and start with the self-care before it ruined their job and their family. But, you know, we talk a lot about just adversity in education and adversity amongst people throughout, not only up to the superintendency, but also down to bus drivers and, you know, even educational assistants and teachers. And a lot of the time, it could be collegial adversity. It could be from a teacher to an administrator adversity. What are some of the stories that you interviewed people for your book that really stood out and that maybe people can learn from and realize that they're not alone and maybe how they can come out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, I mean, and Rebecca and I, we collected hundreds and hundreds of stories from it. And we were just blown away by the people who wanted to speak up about it, right? And they're protected by pseudonym, right? So we can't just go down the street and say, you wrote that story, or, you know, you talked about us. But, you know, here's what we learned. And I don't really think, you know, if I went into the stories, there are a million of them. But here's what we found in our research. We found kind of two different trends taking place. Mm-hmm. One is that staff members, they take a lot of pride in their workplace, educators do. And when they see someone who isn't effective, they feel that if it's not going to be addressed, they take it upon themselves to backstab and create adversity for that person, so they'll leave, right? But then there's the flip side. There could be incredible educators, incredible school leaders, beautiful teachers who worked super hard and really had their thing going on. And there's this factor of jealousy and inadequacy that others feel around it, right? Yeah. So then they do the same type of things, those tactics, those adversarial tactics to dunk and drown their colleagues, right? So what we found, what I'm trying to say is on that continuum, it could be from a terrible staff member who really doesn't need to go all the way up to the most, like, you want to clone that person and have a million of those types of teachers and educators because they're just wonderful. So, you know, we found that people respond to these situations emotionally, and we talk about emotional driving forces, right? We talk about jealousy and fear and people who don't want to be held accountable, and, right, we have all these emotional triggers that we discuss in our research, and then we link it to, okay, what are they actually doing to people to create an adverse environment, right? What are they doing to dunk someone else? And we go into those strategies. So it, you know, and I don't buy, you know, I think a lot of people think like, well, Rick, you know, they're just human beings and they're going to mess up now and again. And I don't buy that. I think there's a lot of calculated nonsense and drama that people actively decide to engage in. And they want to make others' lives miserable.
Yeah.
You know, they want to break them. And I understand mistakes, and I understand the power of apologizing and being grateful and forgiveness. And we write about that in the Dunk Tank. But I think people do set out to create adverse environments purposely because they want to win, you know, and someone's standing in their way to win. And I, you know, that's what we wanted to expose. It's funny that you mentioned, you know, chapter 6 of our book about alcohol and drugs. You know, we had a publisher who said, you know, very renowned publishers say, we'll publish your book, but you have to take chapter 6 out of it. And Rebecca and I were like, no, you know, that's not... That's not how we roll. You know, this is something that needs, this is the elephant in the room. We need to talk about it. And Dave Burgess, you know, he was brave and noble enough to accept our manuscript and said, you know, chapter 6 is one of the best chapters in that book. You know, so I think it's, there's a lot of adversity that's hidden and kicked under the rug. And I think, you know, with Dave as our publisher and our mission to expose that within organizations, that's what we have to start doing more of.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're so focused on students and, you know, what's best for students. And a lot of the time we lose sight of helping our colleagues. And as you said, there are people who, you know, set up to backstab others because of jealousy. And one of the things that stood out when I read the book was sometimes you go into an organization and you really don't know. I mean, you're interviewing for the job, you accept the job, you really don't know what kind of culture and climate you're walking into, right? And there might have been people that were backstabbed in the past, and, you know, maybe you're filling that position, and, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, coming into an adverse environment, what would an educator do when they're, you know, kind of stuck, and they're, you know, they accepted a job and then they found out, oh, this is just not the place, you know, I want to be, because you kind of see things come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff hidden under these rocks, right? And I always keep the mindset of the moment I get a new job or the moment that I'm arriving into a new position, I update my resume that day. That day, because I don't know what's going to be under the rocks there. I'm fortunate enough that where I'm at now, there's nothing under the rocks. They know my story. They know who I am. They know that I, so there isn't this backstabbing factor, and I'm very happy. And I almost think it made me more secure in myself. But yeah, the advice sometimes is if the organization is not going to address adversity and they're going to ignore the elephant in the room, you just have to leave. I mean, there's no way around it unless you want to stay and try to fix it. But you know, sometimes there isn't a tool in the toolbox to fix that bolt that that's stripped.
No, I find that so refreshing for a lot of educators that, you know, kind of they stay in a position and it doesn't help their mental health a lot of the time, because like they're trying to fix things. They're trying to make things better. But if there's a lot of pushback or people that just want things the way they are, nothing they can do will help change the situation.
Right. And it sounds like, and we write about that in the Dunk Tank, it sounds like we're prescribing for people to be quitters. And we're not saying that at all. We're saying that you're actually not quitting if you leave. You're finding victory in its own right.
Yeah, and I think the more people, sometimes the more they experience adversity and situations that, you know, really hard to work through at that time, the better they become in the end. Like you said, you've made it full circle and you've learned from your experiences. So, you know, how would you advise somebody who's maybe coming out of the Dunk Tank and coming out of an adverse situation to move forward, even though they feel like, you know, everything's really, they're kind of stuck, right? They've come out of that situation, but they're kind of stuck, and they have a lot to offer, but you know, somebody might not see that in them. How would you advise somebody like that?
Yeah, you know, when I came out of education briefly and worked at a an educational resource company, I missed, and this is pre-COVID, so I missed that feeling of the first day of school for the first time in my life. You know, I missed the smell of the wax floors and the excitement of the kids coming in and the excitement of the teachers and the staff, right? I missed that for a few years. And I was very saddened by that, you know, and I thought to myself, this can't be over for me, because I really miss it and I enjoy it and I know who I am. So I think my advice to people would be to get back to the true joy that you remember of a situation and make that your driving force. You know, I miss, you know, seeing the kids and just, you know, they just make you feel like a million bucks. And it's the sensory part, right, Dana? It's I smelled a loss. You know, I saw a loss, I heard a loss in my life that I craved and never thought that I would lose. And that drove me to get back into it.
I like how you talk about, those memories, whether it's you know, smell, or, you know, like for me, when I think of the first day of school, you just think of the smiles on kids' faces. You think of maybe the noise, right?
Yeah.
After being in the building and preparing, and then they come. So, yeah, and I think educators can look back and think about those differences they've made in children's lives, you know, sometime in their career, either in that situation where they were in the dunk tank or beforehand, and that, you know, what, whether or not they've gone through a difficult situation, that, you know, this is their driving force, education, right?
Right.
Whatever role that they serve in, you know, they do have a purpose in education. And, you know, sometimes it does take a winding road to reach the place you're supposed to be. But right. As you said, now you're back, besides writing your books and being a consultant, now you're back, as a leader, and, you know, you're seeing those kids. So how did that make you feel when you went back into the building after being out of a school building for so many years, and kind of what was a sensory experience on your end?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I left out the fact that I actually went back to that school, right, to Western New York Maritime Charter School as a teacher.
Okay.
And I wrote about this on one of my blogs, and I have some stuff on my website that shows like this mythical path, right? Mm-hmm. You know, teacher to assistant principal to assistant superintendent to superintendent, and then not in it, and then back to a teacher, which people look at as a demotion, and I saw it as a promotion, right? Mm-hmm. And I went into the classroom as an ELA teacher, ninth grade, and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy I met these kids, mm-hmm. you know. And from there, my superintendent asked me to be the assistant head of schools. So I was honored to do that, and then was in conflict because I didn't want to leave the classroom, because
yeah.
I really love that, right? And then I thought, this will be cool, because now I can, right, my babies, I can see my kids in the building at large and help them on a grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
We have two campuses. We have a middle school and a high school campus. So I'm able to kind of do what I used to do best and have a greater impact on them, even though, I mean, teaching changed my life. And to teach, this was years since I was in the classroom.
Yeah.
You know? So that was, it was terrific. It changed my life.
Yeah. And I like to hear that, because there's so many people who've been in a leadership position, you know, 20 plus years, and they'll observe their teachers, but rarely are they called upon to sub for a class or actually take over
right.
a class. And for you to kind of, you know, step back into that role and see that as a promotion, just because, you know, you got to work with kids in this other capacity and now leading them. I think that's, you know, at least for principals to take the time a couple times a year and sub for somebody is a good idea, because that way they're really seeing and they're taking that lead role in the classroom instead of in the building.
Yeah. I remind, you know, I had to hop on a plane a couple of times when I was teaching, you know, a couple years ago, and present on the dunk tank, present on Let Them Speak, which is another book. But my students were mad at me. they were mad. Like that made me feel, I felt bad that they were upset that I was gone, but that made me feel just terrific. Like they were mad at me. They're like, don't you ever do that to us again.
Uh-huh.
You know? I'm like, it was cute. You know, they're terrific.
Yeah. And you learn so much from those students, right? Cause they'll say it how it is. And
oh yeah.
You're really experiencing, you know, what they want from you, as opposed to when you've worked in some of these positions with adversity and you're kind of blinded sometimes to what the others are thinking. Students
right.
will tell you exactly how they feel and, you know, leave no stone unturned.
Yeah.
So you talk a little bit also in some of your writing about writing with courage. How would you advise anybody who's maybe worked in education, who is thinking about writing about experiences they've been through, and how should they write with courage? How should they go about that?
That's a great question. I'm starting to, you know, the more that I come into myself, and as the years go on and I've gained some different wisdom, I'm finding that I think a lot of people hold back
mm-hmm.
on telling their story
mm-hmm.
and writing about some really heavy duty things in education, especially. I'll see a lot of books come out and they're feel good books and they kind of say the same thing and they're repetitive about the message, you know, and I get it. I mean, everybody has a livelihood and they're just trying to pay their bills. But my advice would be to write something that is going to shake it up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, write those things, those stories, those messages, that advice that will help people go beyond the basic kind of status quo foundation of a topic.
Yeah.
And that's where we need the help in our field is to really get into it, you know, roll our sleeves up and talk about those things that a lot of people won't talk about or don't want to talk about. And just write a page a day, you know, write a series of blogs that you'll turn into a book, or just write at least a page. It doesn't take that long. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the year, you'll have 365 pages, yeah. Right? I mean, it's like just, you know, open up and talk about the things that will really, really help people, not just reinforce kind of what they already know.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, I think that's great advice because everybody has a story to tell. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, learning to be transparent and, you know, telling your own story rather than maybe things that you've heard through a variety of professional development opportunities or other books that you've read. Like you said, it can get repetitive, right? So I think that goes a long way because like the guests I'm interviewing for the podcast, you know, my goal is to hear everybody's unique story and how that gets them, has gotten them to the place they're at and how they've managed to get out of the trenches. So my hope is that this is inspiring educators.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the topic, and even though we've communicated with one another, when you came out with Out of the Trenches, I'm like, wow, that's exactly, you know, those are the types of things that we need to help people with. And it helps the speakers who are on with you too. You know, it's therapeutic in its own right that you and I are talking this through together. Mm-hmm. You know, John Harper, he does the My Bad podcast, you know, a great guy, has stories of his own. I think these are the things that people need now more than ever.
Yeah.
Our world is pretty topsy-turvy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. I think as we go into a new school year, it's nice to keep in mind that you're not the only one struggling, right? Because a lot of people are thinking about wanting to quit education or how are they going to get through this year with remote learning or whatever their district's plan is.
Right.
You know, everybody has faced some adversity. And I think a lot of the time people feel like they're on their own island, whether they're in a teacher role or a leader role. And I think through like Twitter, you know, groups, professional development groups, there's a lot of places that people can find support, and it might not be in their own organization. And so you said a lot of the work that you did was with Rebecca Cota. Where did you find support kind of when you were in this trench situation in hell, like you said? Was it mostly, like you said, it was from people that you might not have been expecting to receive support from, and they kind of came out of the woodwork to support you?
Yeah, you know, it's you're friends with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then you have your close friends. And you find that maybe your close friends, and I had some close friends who were there to support me, mm-hmm. and some who turned their backs on me after a little time. Because they just didn't want to be affiliated with me. It wasn't that they didn't like me or they just didn't want, right? They didn't want that association anymore. But then there were people who were kind of second or third tier friends, like your acquaintances. You've known each other for a long time. You've been in the field together. You've gone through some things. I've had some of those people step up and stay right by my side through everything. So But the stable force, you know, my family and my wife, my kids, just amazing. And I think, you know, when I even went back into teaching and I sat in this interview, you know, to go back into the classroom, I didn't shy away from my story. I told the superintendent, I told her exactly what happened. And it was funny that she said, well, I've read your books already, so, which was nice because I was very honored by that. But yeah, life is amazing. It's good to wake up in the morning and I feel terrific.
So out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what's the one thing that you'd especially like listeners to remember?
I think we all have our own recoveries that we go through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even this whole COVID situation and the race relations in the United States and really across the globe, it's a very trying time, you know, and we're finding, it, you know, my wife and I talk about there are these natural disasters happening around the U.S. especially, and there's forces of nature, right? There's all sorts of weird bugs coming into the, it's just, there's so many weird things going on, right? That I think we all have our own recoveries, and there's economic recovery, there's schooling recovery. And I think we need to share our recoveries with each other, you know, hence out of the trenches. And, you know, a beautiful group of, educational consultants and authors, we all banded together and we actually wrote a pretty hefty book called Recovery Mode. And we made it free. You know, we wanted to recognize the economic times that we're in. So we just did a free ebook for everybody, and we've had like almost 3,000 downloads in a couple of months, you know. And if it can help people, you know, we just wanted to share our own recoveries and help others to recover as they go into the new school year.
Mm-hmm. Where can people find that book and get in touch with you online and find out about your books that you've read?
Yeah, no, thanks. They can certainly go to my website, rickjetter.com, and you can find me on almost any social media channel with just the same thing, you know, the at handle Rick Jetter. And you can find Recovery Mode on my website, or you can find it on our company, Pushing Boundaries Consulting. But yeah, they just can go on and download it, a PDF or a flipbook. And I think it'll give people some really cool perspectives on going into the new school year.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. It was great talking with you today.
Thanks for having me, Dana. You're awesome. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.